Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's Greg Olsen at the 10, at the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across western New York. It's the first day of the mandatory minicamp, and in studio with us, Bills second-year linebacker Kiko Alonso. Coming up in the second hour, we'll talk about Hall of Fame coach Chuck Knoll, who passed away over the weekend. Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette will join us. And we'll get an update from the Bills Fan Advisory Board at 8:30.
This is pandemonium!
At the 10, at the 5, heads to the end zone, touchdown! C.J. Spiller, touchdown Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tuesday night, John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive tonight in our air-conditioned studio. I'm happy to say, because it was hot out there today. Hot watching practice, mini-camp practice today. Mandatory minicamp. We've got a lot to tell you about that workout today, and we will as the show moves along. A couple of hours here from 7 to 9 p.m. You heard the lineup. Kiko Alonso in studio with us at 7:30. The Bills' second-year linebacker making the switch to outside linebacker, coming off an outstanding rookie season. We'll talk with Kiko about what he accomplished last year, what he's looking to do this year, and his new position in a new defense. Chuck Knoll passed away over the weekend. You probably saw that. Ed Bouchette, who's covered the Steelers for about 30 years now, for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He'll be joining us at 8 o'clock tonight live to give us his thoughts on Chuck Knoll and what he meant to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Bills Fan Advisory Board continues to meet. They had a meeting last week. We've talked about this a couple of times. The Bills have assembled a group of season ticket holders and regular game day purchasers and put them together for a fan advisory board. I believe they've had three meetings now. We're going to talk with one of the members of that board, Craig Hinderberg, a little bit later on tonight, about 8:30 or so, about what they've discussed and what kind of input they're providing for the Buffalo Bills as far as the fan experience. We want input from you. We want to hear from you tonight on the show about the Bills, and anything you want to say is up for discussion. Phone lines are open, 803-0550, the number. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. You can always reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We've said it for months on the show. I mean, we've said it for at least 4, maybe 5 months, and we all know it. E.J. Manuel holds the key to the 2014 Buffalo Bills season. Anyone dispute that? Would anyone dispute the fact that EJ is the key guy? They've surrounded him with weapons on offense. They've beefed up his protection. They have made the defense better, attempted to make the defense better this year. So we know that EJ Manuel is the key. Other than EJ, who's the next most important person around the Buffalo Bills for their success this season? Who's the second most important person, critical person, when it comes to the Bills' success? Give us a call with your thoughts on that. 803-0550 is the number. If you're calling from outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. Get in now. The lines are open. Who's the second most critical piece of the puzzle for the Bills this year? The second most important person when it comes to the Bills' success this year? Who do you think it might be? 803-0550 is the number. I've got a few thoughts on that, and there are no shortage of candidates. I'll read you some of the tweets that we've already received on this in a moment. I mean, initially, I might say Sammy Watkins, providing a dimension to the offense that the Bills need, providing a potentially dynamic weapon for E.J. Manuel. We've already seen in the, 8 or 9 practices, maybe 7 or 8 practices that he has had with the Buffalo Bills, how much Watkins can bail out these quarterbacks, can make them look good with the catches he makes, with the way he is able to get to the ball. Sammy Watkins, I think, is a critical piece. Is he the most critical piece of the puzzle other than E.J.? I would say not, although he'd be in my top 3 or 4. You know who I think is the most critical piece after EJ for the Bills' success this year? Maybe not much of a surprise. Brandon Spikes. We all know how much the Bills struggled against the run last year. They did a lot of good things on defense last year. They took the ball away, lots of interceptions, lots of sacks, lots of pressure. New defensive scheme this year and a renewed emphasis on stopping the run. Brandon Spikes comes over from the New England Patriots to do just that, to try to provide the run stuffing that this Buffalo Bills defense needs. I sat down with Brandon Spikes today. We taped a video interview that's going to be up on our website in the next couple of weeks or so, and just got a sense from him of how determined he is to make this work, of how confident he is in his ability, how badly he wants to be a three-down linebacker, and most of all, the overriding impression I got from talking with Brandon Spikes today is how he cannot wait to start hitting. We talked to him after today's minicamp workout. No pads, no contact, no hitting. And he said it's driving him crazy. He wants to start hitting people, preferably on the other team, but he'll take what he can get at training camp. I think Brandon Spikes is the second most critical piece of the puzzle for the Buffalo Bills going into this year. They've got to find a way to stop the run. They've got to be more consistent defensively. They've got to play great defense, to take the pressure off a second-year quarterback, E.J. Manuel, even with all those weapons. And I think after Manuel, Brandon Spikes is the key man in the puzzle for the Buffalo Bills as far as success this year. That would be my vote. But you can vote for a player. You can vote for a coach. You can mention a personnel man. Maybe it's Doug Whaley. After E.J. Manuel, who's the next most critical piece of the puzzle for the Buffalo Bills' success this year? Who is, next in line? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free from outside Buffalo, it's 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We'll start with Jim in Tonawanda. Jim, who's the second most critical piece of the puzzle for the Buffalo Bills this year?
Well, that's funny. You hit both guys I was thinking about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wanted to talk about Sammy Watkins for a minute, okay? I love this guy. Let's face it. He was the best offensive player in the country this job last year, the best. And we got him. So I love the fact that Whaley went out of the box, took a risk, and picked up this guy because on this team, really, in order to put this nucleus together that we need, we have two real stubs. We have Mario Williams on defense, and we got Watkins on offense. So I love this guy. I'm very excited about him. So to me, he's a big, big, big piece.
All right, Jim, thanks very much. Sammy Watkins, he thinks, is the second most critical person on the Buffalo Bills roster for their success this year. I mentioned him as he's among the candidates in my mind, and Jim mentioned how, in his mind, the Bills got the best offensive player in the draft. If you ask Nathaniel Hackett and others in the building here, they'll tell you they got the best player in the draft, offense or defense. Frank and Amherst, you're on the air. Who's the most important critical piece of the puzzle after E.J. Manuel this year, Frank?
Hey, John, before I get to that, I'd like to make a comment about Chris Brown.
Yes.
Just among the announcers, I felt like I heard this voice before, and I felt like it was Spencer Ross and Howard Cosell in one. What do you think about that?
You mean Chris when he filled in last week?
Yeah, his voice sounded very familiar. I was trying to think in my childhood, and I remember those two guys, Spencer Ross and Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
It sounded exactly like it.
I've never thought of that. I never thought Chris sounded like Howard Cosell, but let me listen to it again. I talk to Chris every day here at work. I'll see. Let me look at that. You might be onto something there, Frank.
Well, the second most critical person, I believe, is Coach Marone. I believe Whaley has done a great job pretty much, filling the roster with, all kinds of players from, whether it's former first-round draft picks or, other guys from other teams. And, I wasn't impressed with the hire just because I thought it was kind of a crony hire with, Syracuse background and Brendan being, from Syracuse. And I just hope that he does a good job because I would love to have him succeed, but I think he's the guy that's on the hot seat a little bit.
Frank, is there anything, you've had 1 year of Doug Marone now as head coach, is there anything you saw last year that makes you have an indication of, how Coach Marone, I don't think he's going to be dramatically different than he was a year ago. You?
Well, I hope he is because, I'll chalk it up to just him being a first year coach, but I just did not think that he was sharp. When I think of Belichick, I feel like, we got a sharp coach, but, with Marone, I didn't think, he was sharp. And I'm hoping it was just because of, you know, his first year. But, I mean, I also did not like him joking around too much, you know, after games. He would make some silly comments because I feel like, you know, that's exactly what Stevie Johnson did. And, you know, he acted a little bit goofy, but I felt like, you know, some of the comments that he made last year, it wasn't, you know, kind of like straightforward, kind of a tough coach type of thing. It was a little bit of a, you know, kind of a soft guy. That's what I thought.
All right, Frank, thanks for your call. We're talking to Bills fans tonight about the second most critical piece of the puzzle for the Buffalo Bills' success this year. I think we can all agree E.J. Manuel is the key man, but who's next in line? Who has the next most to say about whether the Bills are a success this year? And we've got the phone lines open to do that. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Kiko Alonso, Bills linebacker, joins us in studio, so make sure you stick around for that. And we are going to get through a recap of the first day of the minicamp today, including some thoughts from E.J. Manuel and others, but we'll stick with the phones for a minute or so here as we talk to the fans about the important pieces for the Buffalo Bills this year. Jim in Amherst. Jim, after E.J., who's the most critical piece of the puzzle for the Bills?
Williams, in my opinion. I just think that with the defense that we're running, we're kind of thin at 4-3 defensive end. And I'm concerned if Mario Williams goes down, whereas the 3-4, you can put some linebackers, move them around, and still create pressure. You really do need a 4-3 defensive end that can rush the passer, and it concerns me, you know, a little bit.
You're concerned about the health aspect for Mario Williams? Is that what you're talking about?
The depth behind him.
Okay. I mean, Mario Williams had 13 sacks last year. If he has that kind of production sack-wise this year, is that enough from him, would you think? Because that's a lot of sacks.
Oh, no, I think he's a great player. I'm just worried about it behind him.
Gotcha.
Because, I mean, he's the only true 4-3 defensive end we have on the roster. You know, I mean, that's really good.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Let's go to Nate in Lancaster. Nate. Second most critical player on the roster after E.J. Manuel, who would you think it is?
Hey, John, I would probably go with Stephon Gilmore. You know, I think that, you know, you look at our defense, you look at our line, pretty solid. Look at the linebackers, again, pretty solid with Kito going into his second year here. But, I mean, look at that secondary. You had Gilmore his first year. It was unbelievable. Fell off a little last year with the injury and everything. But I think if he can get back to that, you know, almost star form that, you know, we know he's capable of, I think we're going to have, you know, one of the most feared defenses in the league coming up to this year.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Nate, but I will say this. They have depth there at cornerback, and more depth than they had a year ago with the addition of Corey Graham. And Ron Brooks has been a standout through a couple of weeks here of workouts. You'd hope that Stephon Gilmore can play the entire year, stay healthy, kind of get back to some of the playmaking that he did during his rookie year. But if he were not able to, there is depth behind him, so I think that might mitigate that a little bit. Nick in Buffalo. Nick, after E.J., the second most important piece of the puzzle for the Buffalo Bills, who would you think?
I'd have to say C.J. Spiller. I think everyone kind of overlooks C.J. I kind of think we should be looking for some of the production we saw back in 2012. I think he was a little bit injured, hobbled last year, and I think that, you know, if he returns to form, that that's going to open up a lot of the passing plays for E.J. You know, especially with Fred aging the way he is, we need to see some of that production from C.J. again.
Yeah, a big year from C.J. Spiller would open up, I think you're right, you're onto something there, Nick. A big year from C.J. Spiller would open up enormous possibilities for the success of this team. And if I'm thinking about, as you said, the type of year that he had a couple of years ago. I mean, a 1,000-yard rushing year with a healthy dose of passing yardage in there as well. A big year from C.J. Spiller could mean the world of good for this Buffalo Bills team. I think you make a good point. Rob in North Carolina. Rob, welcome to the show. Is there anybody in mind? If it's not E.J. or after E.J., who would be the most critical piece of the Bills puzzle? What do you think?
I think it's going to be Spikes coming from the Patriots and his run stop ability. I think it's going to be a huge profit to the Bills to do so. But on another note, I have a question as far as Manuel goes. If he does produce and we don't make the playoffs, then what?
No, I don't know. I don't know what. I mean, you know, who knows how the season will play out. It's hard for me to imagine if EJ has a good year and you say Purdue's that they won't be a playoff team. It's hard for me to imagine that happening. But, you know, I don't know what would happen if he plays well and they don't make the playoffs. If he doesn't play well and they don't make the playoffs, then what? I don't, who knows? I have a hard time. I've always had a hard time projecting beyond, you know, 1 year. Or even projecting, in many cases, a couple of months out, because things happen. Injuries happen. Players get better. Players get worse. You know, the ball bounces a funny way. There's luck involved. I have a hard time kind of projecting out. In this case, you're trying to look, what, 5-6 months out to tell me, want me to tell you what happens if EJ produces and they don't make the playoffs? Boy, I don't know. I don't know. A call here from Jason in West Seneca. Jason, after EJ, who's the next most critical piece of the puzzle for the Bills?
I feel it would be actually whoever our second-string quarterback ends up being, barring if EJ produces or doesn't produce or is prone to being injured. I feel that our backups are would normally be a third-string or not on any other team in the league.
Really? You think Thad Lewis? You don't have any faith in Thad Lewis as a capable backup?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Jason. I think Thad Lewis, by the way, looked pretty good today, and we'll talk about that, but Thad got some significant playing time last year. They're pretty comfortable with Thad Lewis as the backup. And since I saw him play last year, he won some games last year as the backup. Like I say, you know, you want your backup to break even, you know, win half his games. And Thad Lewis is just about there, I think. But I understand if you haven't seen enough of him or don't like what you see. I get that. We're taking calls from fans tonight. E.J. Manuel, acknowledged by just about everybody, is the key man in the Buffalo Bills' success this year. Who's the next most important piece of the puzzle? Lines are open at 803-0550. Toll-free number 1-888-550-2550. You can reach us on Twitter, also at John Murphy Show. We've had 7 calls so far and 7 different answers from the fans on the phone. Can you believe that? Jay Harris, producer. Remember we talked about this when I threw this out there? And I think Brandon Spikes, to me, is the next most critical. I'm going to go through some of the tweets here. But 7 calls and 7 different answers as to the next most important piece of the puzzle after EJ Manuel. What does that tell you, Jay?
Well, that there's obviously not a dying need on this team. There's a lot of depth on this team. And to spread around the importance of that. A couple of weeks ago, we threw this out there and we got a wide variety of responses that we haven't seen in years. I forget what the
different
topic
questions.
Was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a different question, but it sort of relates a little bit into the fact that...
Maybe, was it the time we asked fans about what's the hole on the roster? What's the glaring hole on the roster?
I think so.
And no, people really couldn't
identify.
So
this identify. Is kind of the opposite end of things, but I think it relates a little bit to the fact that, and we haven't seen this on our end, and fans too in a long time, where there's been so much variety of, okay, this is the importance, this would be the quarterback, and now we're looking at the defensive side of the ball too, and just the wide range, I don't think that's a bad thing. I know we're asking for a critical need at different positions, but I don't think that's a bad thing to have it spread around like that.
Right.
Because I think it shows that there really isn't that dire need on this team to perform at the best, or if this person doesn't perform, they're going to sink and not do well and reach that 9-10 win.
Right. EJ's the key. We all agree on that. And that's
outside
why
of that.
Yeah, it's important. I don't know if it's important, but it's certainly thought-provoking enough, I think, to raise the question, who's the next key after E.J. Manuel? Let me read some of the tweets, people responding via Twitter to the question. After E.J. Manuel, who's the next most critical piece of the puzzle for the Bills this year? John Kozorski tweets Jim Schwartz, new defensive coordinator. Okay. Stevie the Greek tweets in Stephon Gilmore, third-year pro, really needs to take a big step. Secondary and D can't afford for him to just be okay. Okay. David Marciano tweets, Doug Marrone. He says, I think he meant to put Marrone, but he put N Marrone. Doug Marrone will say, there's enough talent to win regardless of Manuel. Rex Ryan did it with Sanchez, Alex Smith as well. Marrone. Okay. Matt Williams, with Watkins dealing with opposing team's top cornerback, I'd say Woods' role, Robert Woods' role as the number 2 wide receiver, will be pivotal this year. Aaron Blacklock. Most important to me, this is his tweet, the running back situation offensively, and we need to stop the run on the other side of the ball. Okay. Reading through some of the tweets. Chase Benke, the O-line. Yeah, they need to show up. Brett Seabold, Hackett for sure. We'll see how he uses Sammy. I'm surprised no one mentioned Nathaniel Hackett yet, because he would be somewhere on my list of most critical pieces to the puzzle here. Josh Bauer, when we asked the question, who's the next most critical piece of the puzzle for the Bills after E.J. Manuel, Josh Bauer tweets in his backup, obviously. Jimmy Zelnowski, Aaron Williams, very important at a position lacking depth. There might be some depth back there. Brownbag tweets, the safety opposite Aaron Williams. You're looking at Denora Searcy or Duke Williams over there. Tyler Traub tweets, got to be Sammy Watkins since we don't have first rounder next year. He has to produce now. That's a very good point. Maybe that's what I was thinking too when I mentioned Sammy is one of the most important pieces of the puzzle, the fact that he is this year's first rounder and next year's first rounder as well. Buffalo fan tweets in, most important, Coach Marrone. James Patton, the OC, Hackett, he's got to be able to put in a position to win every week. C.J. Spiller tweets in, James from Wanai. Sammy Watkins because his first year, but two dynamic players. James Renfro tweets, Nate Hackett, Spikes and Darius Rundy. Matt tweets in, I'd like to see Robert Woods make the leap this season. So via Twitter, a couple of people think Nathaniel Hackett is the key man. We've talked about some of the others, but it is an interesting question, I think. And we'll get back to this as the show moves along. You can phone in your thoughts. After E.J. Manuel, I think, is acknowledged as the most important person in the Buffalo Bills, success or failure this year, who's the next most important? We'll get to more phone calls as the show moves along. I do want to tell you a little bit about today's first day of mandatory minicamp on the field, outside, blistering heat, sunshine. The Bills moved it up an hour, I think, because they thought they might get rained on. The rain has yet to hit. A couple of guys who were not at the voluntary sessions were there. Defensive end Manny Lawson, defensive tackle Alan Branch, both reported to these mandatory minicamps today. Tight end Scott Chandler was excused for a family matter. Offensive lineman Cordy Glenn sat out with an illness. And Chantrell Henderson, the draft pick, the offensive lineman, had transportation issues that kept him off the field today. Marcell Dareus was on the field returning after getting a couple of weeks off of the OTAs after he was taken into custody following an alleged drag racing incident. Dareus was not available for comment after practice. And what else? I think that's pretty much what went on out there today. The Bills had a couple of tryout players on the field today. A couple of cornerbacks, Sam Miller from Florida International and Kamal McElwain from Newberry College, and a wide receiver, Torrey Gurley from South Carolina, all of them on the field. E.J. Manuel on the field got most of the first-team reps. And after the minicamp practice today, E.J. talked about where he is and where this offense is going into this first day of the mandatory minicamp.
We were a little frustrated. I know I was a little bit throughout the OTAs, but I like, the fact that he's put more on us, especially that, we have young guys at skill positions, but I think that's just put more onus on us to really, put the time in to study. And this week it's easier because we pretty much know all the plays. We've done it, a bunch of times, so there's not going to be any new surprises as far as play calling goes.
You talked about how he trusts you more.
Yep.
Were you able to change plays last year? Did you audible or not a whole lot?
No, I could. It's never a time where a coach is going to tell you, hey, you cannot audible, you know what I mean? But I was able to audible. It was just a lot of times we didn't need to. I know in the run game, we've amped it up some more as far as checking in and out of plays or going from run to pass or pass to run. But all those things, I think, just came with my maturity in the offense.
Will there be more freedom this year, or did you have all the freedom you needed?
I would say there will be more. I think so. I think Coach Hack is going to put, everything that we need to put on my plate to win. So I don't think he's going to be limited at all as far as his play calling. But at the end of the day, you can go out there with 20 plays. If you execute those plays, you'll win the game. So, football's not that hard. You just got to go out there, execute, and make plays.
Now that you've had a year, are you more likely now to go up to him and say, Coach, I don't like that play?
Yeah.
Maybe you might want to.
Right.
That wouldn't have been a good idea. Like.
Yeah. Well, it's never, I'm not going to say it wasn't a bad idea last year, but I think it's just having the rapport with your coach. Sometimes there may be plays that I don't like and I'll tell him. Honestly, I mean, I know there's a few plays that we came in to this week in minicamp. I just wanted to be clean. I wanted to have sharp reads. And I told him, hey, I don't like that play. I don't like that play. And he took it out. So I think that's just having that good rapport between Coach Hackett and I.
That is E.J. Manuel speaking after today's minicamp workout. We'll hear more from him as the evening rolls along. And we are going to go through some of the highlights of today's minicamp practice, a long one, couple of hours, hot, steamy temperatures. These Bills players are still here as we speak, going through meetings. It's a long day. Both E.J. and a couple of other players talked about how they arrived. Well, E.J. told reporters today the quarterbacks arrive here at 7. They have a full team meeting at 8 in the morning. They have meetings and weightlifting in the morning. They break for lunch. They're out on the field at 2 o'clock in today, as a matter of fact. Two and a half hours out there. A little break for dinner and then back to the meeting rooms tonight. So it's a 12-hour day these 3 days. Long days for the mandatory minicamp for the Buffalo Bills. And we'll get through some of the highlights of the practice today a little bit later on in the show. The Bills were happy to see Kiko Alonso working back more and more into teamwork as he was held out of the early portions of OTAs as he recovers from off-season surgery on his hip and on his shoulder. And we're going to get a chance to talk with Kiko about that and his approach to this second year in the NFL with the Buffalo Bills. Kiko Alonso standing by. He'll be in studio with us when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live tonight from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
First day of minicamp at One Bills Drive, a hot, steamy day out on the field, and tonight we are joined in the cool, air-conditioned studio by second-year linebacker Kiko Alonso. Kiko, thanks for coming by here.
Thanks for having me.
Last night, you got your media training, so you're all set for this radio interview, right?
Yep. I got it all under control now.
You don't need media training. What did they tell you that you didn't already know?
You could always use some media training, get a specialist to help you out. It's always good to have a specialist give you tips and advice. Yeah.
Did they tell you to avoid questions from people like me and to obscure what's really going on?
No.
No, I know. They tell you to be smart about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about this process off the field first, to be back here in your second year without worrying about combines and drafts and visits and pro days. Do you feel like this is a different sort of offseason, maybe even setting you up better for success in your second year than a year ago?
Yeah, definitely, because you get to train, you get to be with the team more, and you don't have to do all that combine and stuff to get into the league. You get to just focus on playing football and getting better in all the aspects that you want to get better at.
And you get to rest, right? I mean, when you're coming out of Oregon, there's not a whole lot of time if you're going to be in an all-star game and a senior bowl or a bowl game and a combine. There's no downtime, is there?
Oh, no. They don't do you much justice with all that stuff. So it's nice coming off that to just rest a little bit and get your body back and then go back to work.
Kiko, your offseason, the start of it, you dealt with some surgical issues. Just talk about what you had done in general and what, you know, what you needed to have done and how that feels now.
I just had my hip and my knee done. You know, it was really small procedures, and I feel great now. I'm out there doing everything, and, you know, I'm just glad to be back and move forward.
By the end of last season, did you feel like did you know you were going to have some procedures done? Did you feel like you were kind of breaking down a little bit by the end of last year?
Not completely. I mean, I think everyone in December is hurting. So, I mean, I don't think I was feeling any different from anyone else. So, that's just normal. But I didn't know. I found out after the season.
I was thinking about when the Bills started the OTAs a couple of weeks ago, about, you know, it's very rare that a player can kind of make a big jump on or off a roster or up a depth chart in OTAs. But you, I thought, last year kind of made your mark in the OTAs in the minicamp. Do you feel that way? Like, if they drafted you second round, obviously they thought highly of you. But once this coaching staff got a look at you in the OTAs and minicamp, they pretty much knew they had a starter on the roster there. Do you agree?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, Marone's whole outlook is that no one gets a position in OTAs. So I think they got an idea, but I don't think they definitely were waiting for the pads to come on and see if I could obviously perform well with the pads on. But, I mean, definitely had to come in OTAs and make an early impression.
Maybe they were waiting to see if you could run and cover as much territory with the pads on as you did in the OTAs.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, when you play on Sundays, it's with pads on, so it's a little different when you're in OTAs, no pads. So, I mean, you don't get the full look, and you can't really tell.
You seemed comfortable right from the start last season with what they were asking you to do and what this defense required of you last year under Mike Patton. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, I felt comfortable, and, you know, that's just a lot of credit goes to those coaches and my teammates. You know, they helped me out a lot along the way, and no, I don't think I could have done without them.
They put a lot on your shoulders, right? You're calling defensive plays. You were the guy in the middle of that defense last year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they gave me some stuff I had to do, but, you know, like I said, the coaches and my teammates really helped me out, and, you know, they got me ready, and a lot of credit goes to them.
How would you characterize that defense last year? What they asked you to do as the middle linebacker in that defense, inside linebacker?
You know, they wanted me to go out there and make plays, you know, against the run, against the pass, you know, just what a linebacker needs to do is just run around and make plays.
Didn't take long before you were making plays, including, you know, some of the early games, the Carolina game, a sack and an interception. Did you feel like by making some big plays early in the season, that game and then the Baltimore game, kind of a game-clinching interceptions there, did you feel like you got a chance to settle in knowing that you could fit in, that you could make plays in this league?
Yeah. I mean, when you make plays like that, then that definitely, I mean, early, that's definitely a confidence booster, you know. But, you know, that's why I play this game, practice the way I do to make big plays in games like that.
It's last season seems like a long time ago now. We're all kind of pointed towards next season. But have you spent any time during this offseason looking back and figuring out what was your best game, what maybe was your favorite game last year that you played with the Bills?
Yeah, I watched a lot of film, see what I can get better at, and you know, I don't think I can pick out a specific game that I thought was the best. I think in every game I had some bright spots and definitely some spots to improve in. And, you know, I focused on the spots I need to improve in.
Where did you need to improve? What did you think you could get better at?
I think just some little things, you know, against the run, against the pass, just maybe knowing stuff. You know, if I would have done like a step here, step there, then I probably would have been able to make the play. But that comes from practicing and watching film, and so I think I could do a better job preparing during the week, and just doing better studying, and maybe that'll help me make some more plays.
You study film when you're in college at Oregon, obviously. Is it that much different to look at film here? Does it require that much more study?
No, pretty similar. I mean, yeah. You know, it helps. Obviously, it helps a lot to study film because, you know, you got to see what your opponents are going to do. And, you know, that's definitely a big component of the game. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't really change. I mean, but you are going up against top-notch guys, so you really got to be prepared.
We're with linebacker Kiko Alonso. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. And this year, outside linebacker Kiko Alonso. How does that sit with you? What do you think about playing on the outside?
I'm excited. I definitely think I got the skill set to do all the stuff they're asking me to do, and I'm just excited.
How did they approach that with you during this offseason? What did they call you up and say, hey, we're bringing in Brandon Spikes. We want you to try it outside. How did that go?
Yeah, they told me they want to put me at outside. I was all for it. You know, I think I'll be able to make a lot of plays there, and, you know, I'm just excited to go to that spot.
What are the biggest differences for you from inside last year to outside this year?
You know, I don't think it's a lot of differences. There's definitely a lot of similarities. There's, you know, a little bit of difference, but, you know, in the end, I mean, linebacker is linebacker. You're going out there, you're covering, you're playing against the run. You just got to make plays.
Would you say that there's going to be more coverage responsibility for you now on the outside than there was maybe last year?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's going to be pretty similar to last year.
What about pass rush? Would you get involved more in pass rush opportunities now?
I mean, probably same as last year. I rushed the passer last year. I feel like I rushed the passer and, you know, I covered a lot. So I think I'm going to be doing a lot of the same things that I did last year.
Kiko, not only is your role different, but the whole defense is different from a year ago, obviously with Jim Schwartz replacing Mike Patton. How is the defense different, and what does that mean to you?
We're in a 4-3 this year, obviously. Right. But I mean, I don't think it's very different. I think it's similar in the sense that we're an attacking style defense, and we want to get after the offense and dictate the game. And, you know, we just want to go out there, make plays, get sacks, get interceptions, and have some fun.
Do you have a sense of, I mean, Coach Schwartz has had success in the league as a defensive coach and as a head coach. When they make a change like that, do players kind of check out what can we expect from this guy? What has he done in the past? And do you have a sense of what Jim Schwartz has accomplished in the league as a defensive coach?
Yeah, well, when I found out he was our coach, I immediately looked and see what kind of scheme he ran. But yeah, it definitely gives you confidence to see that because he's had a great track record and he's coached some great defenses. So, you know, it's great to work with a guy like that and have him be your coach and, you know, get to play for him.
Kiko Alonso, our guest, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on this first day of the mandatory minicamp at One Bills Drive. What does this, how does this process change from, you know, the OTAs? I know you were held out of the early OTA sessions and finally got some work in last week and even more work, it seemed, a little bit more today.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just easing my way in. But, you know, I feel great. I've felt great for a while now. And, you know, it's just back to playing football and getting ready for the season. You know, every day matters. I'm trying to get better every day.
Is there any sense at all that the defense is playing at a pretty high level? It was not a great day for the Bills offense against the Bills defense today. Coming off the field today, what do guys say about the way you guys performed?
I feel good. I thought we got after it. I thought we were running around. And, you know, on the defensive side, I've got to go watch the film. But you never really know until you watch the film. But I felt good. I felt like we were out there running around and having fun.
People, I guess, should know that. But tell us about the typical schedule for you. You come off the field late in the afternoon and a little bit of a break. But you go back in for some film study tonight, right?
Yeah. Go get some treatment and then go watch the film, go watch today's practice, see what we can improve on, and back at it tomorrow.
Is it a linebacker meeting or an entire defensive meeting or even a full team meeting? How does that work?
I'm not sure yet. It's going to be one of those.
Yeah, you'll go where they tell you from.
Yeah.
And you're watching practice video and making corrections, right, for tomorrow's practice?
Yeah, because, you know, we want to keep moving forward. We don't want to take any steps back. So that's why we watch the film, so we can improve on our mistakes and get better.
There's only, well, this day is gone, two more days left in this minicamp process. Do you look forward to the end of this off-season work here at the stadium and the essentially month you'll have off between now and training camp?
Yeah, I look forward to, you know, because that's one step closer to the season. I look forward to that month to, you know, I'm going to be training hard so I can be in top shape and ready for this, ready to have a great season.
Where will you go during the month when you're off?
Going to Oregon.
You go back to Oregon?
Yeah.
And train. You don't just relax and get ready for the season.
Oh, no. I'm going to train.
What, is there any sense of, like, you got to be careful to overtrain? I mean, you don't want to come to camp
exhausted. Well, I'm not going to go crazy. I'm not going to, you know, lose my mind. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to be smart, but, you know, I'm going to get ready.
And for you, what does that mean as far as mentally, physically,
Both, definitely. Mentally, watching some film, studying my notes, studying, and then physically just working out and getting in shape, getting ready to, you know, go for that long. It's obviously a long season. Get ready for that long season.
Kiko, you accomplished a lot in your rookie year. This Bills defense last year accomplished a lot. How do you approach this year? I mean, what's the goal? What's the target for the defense and for this Bills team overall?
Well, I think the goal is obviously the Super Bowl. That's what every team's goal is. But I think we just want to get better every single day, get better at the little things, and just get better every single day. And if we do that, we'll be right where we need to be.
This is your first interview since media training last night. I think it went well.
I didn't have media training last night. It was a while ago.
Oh, okay. It wasn't last night? So
no,
you've had
no.
Several interviews since then?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had some practice.
All right. Well, you did well. And thank you very much for doing this. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Linebacker Kiko Alonso, our guest, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Kiko Alonso for joining us in studio, the Bills' second-year linebacker. You heard him talk about getting comfortable on the outside. He kind of downplayed how much of a change it would be. It was really good to watch Kiko run around during the practice today, just getting more reps with the ones. I didn't see any OTAs last week when I was out sick, but apparently he got reps with the ones last week as well. But it just looked like he fit out there at outside linebacker, and Spikes looks like he belongs in the middle too. So that's going to be something fun to watch, I think, when they go to training camp in about 4.5 weeks. Thanks again to Kiko. And the media training, I misunderstood. They had a general session for all of the players on the roster last night, just talking about media as part of the mandatory minicamp. But apparently, and I didn't realize this, Kiko went and got some specialized individual media training work during the offseason as well. So good for him. He's an interesting guy. You know, you could tell a year ago he wasn't entirely comfortable with a lot of the interviews he was doing, but certainly I thought he was comfortable with us in the studio a minute or two ago and seemed comfortable talking about the football matters, and a good guy. I wish him well, and looking forward to seeing what he has to bring to the defense in his second year. Talked a lot in the first hour about the Bills going into 2014 and what's the next most important piece of the puzzle after E.J. Manuel. We'll get back to that. We'll take more phone calls in the second hour as well. But some of the tweets that came in on this, James Renfro says Nate Hackett is second most important. Spikes and Darius Rundy. Matt tweets, I'd like to see Robert Woods make the leap this season. Carlos of Nova Scotia tweets, left tackle Gordy Glenn have to protect E.J.'s blind side or backfield collectively. Nathaniel Hackett says Scott Keller. Hackett says Dave on Twitter. Brandon Spikes, that was my choice, according to Will Federpiece. So a lot of different opinions on the next most important piece of the puzzle for the Bills after E.J. Manuel next year. We will resume the discussion next hour. And at the top of next hour, in just a minute or two, we're going to talk about the late Chuck Knoll, the former Pittsburgh Steelers coach, with a guy who covered him for almost three decades down in Pittsburgh. Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette will be joining us when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it? The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, we'll hear more about today's opening day of the Bills minicamp coming up a little bit later on. We'll talk about the Bills fan advisory board at the bottom of this hour, and we'll hear more from E.J. Manuel, more from Manny Lawson, all of that coming up a little bit later on this hour, the second hour of the show. Today in Pittsburgh, they held funeral services to celebrate the life and legacy of Hall of Fame coach Chuck Knoll, former coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who died last Friday night of natural causes. On the line with us live from Pittsburgh, a man who's covered the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette for just about 30 years, Ed Bouchette is live with us. Ed, thanks for being on the air with us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me, John.
How has this news hit Pittsburgh?
Hard. I mean, you know, men get into their 80s. And you never know when it's going to happen. Chuck has been having some health problems. He almost died a couple years ago. He had heart and back problems, and he's had Alzheimer's, although not severe Alzheimer's. I even talked to his wife, Marianne, yesterday at the funeral home, and she said, I wasn't ready for this. She didn't expect it. And, you know, it's Pittsburgh's mourning. They really are.
I was reading a story in today's Post-Gazette about the funeral service at St. Paul Cathedral, and the first line struck me. They talk about the celebrate the life of beloved Steelers head coach Chuck Knoll. He didn't seem like he was – I've never met Chuck Knoll, but he didn't seem like the type of guy who would be beloved. He didn't seem warm and fuzzy, Ed, was he?
No. Chuck was not warm and fuzzy until you got to know him. He came across, especially at Super Bowls when he was at all those press conferences and stuff and people were asking him questions, he came across probably as a little stiff there. But if you got to know Chuck was great when you were talking about anything but football. I mean, anything about life. I did it many times with him over dinner, over just walking off the practice field. He was a multi-talented guy who had varied interests, and he flew his own plane, he piloted his own boat, he grew roses, he was an expert on wine. I mean, he just threw himself into anything that we would be curious about, and he would find out, if he had to hook up a stereo system, which you can appreciate he once did for Myron Cope here, because he came over to Cope to Cope was the broadcaster a long time
sure, yeah.
for the Steelers for yeah. your listeners.
Yeah.
And Cope, he came over to record a segment with Cope, pregame segment, and he saw at Cope's house that the stereo wasn't hooked up. He goes, "What's this?" He says, "I got a new stereo, and I don't know how to hook it up." And Noel says, "Well, let me see if I can do it," and he hooked it all up.
Wow.
That was Chuck.
I really appreciate your Myron Cope imitation, too, Ed. I like that.
Yeah. Well, we all have it down in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I bet you do. one thing, and people in Buffalo might identify with this and maybe don't appreciate this. Before Chuck Noll, the Steelers were a mess as a franchise, weren't they?
Oh, big time. I mean, they were born in 33. They were on a shoestring budget for many of those years. Art Rooney, the beloved owner, was more interested probably in the horses than he was in his football team. But his son Dan Rooney came of age, and he was the one who hired Chuck, and he was the one who set them on the right direction and let Chuck take over. They had been to one playoff game, and I think they tied the Philadelphia Eagles in 46 or 48. I forget which year. And they lost that playoff, and that was it. No postseason other than they played in that old, I think in 62, they played Detroit in that old runner-up bowl.
Right.
That they used to have.
Yeah. Well, how did he do it? And especially, we're here in Buffalo in the midst of a 14-year playoff drought, and the Bills obviously would love to change the culture. I read a quote, you talked to Art Rooney II, where he credited Noel with changing the whole culture of the organization. How did Chuck Noll do that?
Well, he came in and he said, "We're going to build through the draft." And, they had coaches, Buddy Parker in particular, who traded away all the draft choices. I mean, if you go just sometime go look up the Steeler drafts in the 1960s, sometimes they had none. They had no draft picks, or they had a seventh rounder. They dealt them all away for veterans. And Chuck came in and said, "We're going to build through the draft." That was number one. And he said, "I want athletes. I want players with speed. I don't care where we find them." And he had also the good fortune of having a good scouting department that included Bill Nunn, who was a black newspaper guy, mm-hmm. head of sports editor of the black Pittsburgh Courier newspaper here in Pittsburgh. That was a national paper at the time. And he used to pick the all-black teams, all-American black teams back then. He knew where they all were. And most of the NFL teams were ignoring those small black colleges. Bill Nunn helped them dig out guys left and right. And you just look up and down those drafts. I mean, Dwight White, John Stallworth, Donnie Shell. I mean, it goes up and down. Fats Holmes, all from these small, little-known, at the time, black schools where these players couldn't get into the white Southern schools. And he found them, they drafted them, and Chuck coached them.
Didn't Bill Nunn just pass away around the time of the draft
a
month or so ago?
It's been a tough time.
Yeah.
Jack Butler, who went
sure.
to school up there at St. Bonnie, was, I think, 13 months ago. So they've lost some. I've been to too many funerals lately, yeah. John.
We're on the line with Ed Bouchette. He covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and started almost 30 years ago. And by the time you got on the Steelers beat, Ed, Chuck Noll had already won those Super Bowls. He must have been almost an iconic figure by the time you got to start covering that team, correct?
Yeah, when I was a young pup, I covered all their home games in 74 and 75 for a small newspaper here, John. So I'd been around, and then I traveled some with a suburban paper in the 70s. So I knew the roads here and knew Chuck a little bit, but it became my beat in 85, and I felt like a jinx. In 80, they kept They had those iconic 70s, and they dropped back a little bit. And they made the AFC title game in 84. Mm-hmm. I came on the beat in 85, and they didn't make the playoffs again until 89. And this was a place that was used to going to playoffs every year. So it was a different time in the 80s here. It was a tough time because Chuck was going through some tough times. And they got the talent back. He was on his way, and then he threw up his hands and said, "I'm done."
Why did he leave at that point?
Well, it's very complicated. they made the playoffs in 89, and they actually won Coach of the Year in 89. They lost by a point in Denver to Elway, or they were going to play the Browns in the AFC title game with Bubby Brister at quarterback. I mean, he did a masterful job in 89. And in 90 and 91, he changed coordinators because Tom Moore left, the famous Tom Moore, mm-hmm. who was there today, by the way, who coached Peyton Manning. And he left, the offense was a mess. Bubby Brister didn't buy into it. There were a lot of changes, a lot of young guys. And they fell back a little bit, and they were going to ask Chuck to fire some coaches after the 91 season, and he just did not want to go through that again and just said, you know what, it's better for me just to call it a career.
Ed, you wrote a piece in the on the website anyway about some of the guys you've talked to who work for Chuck Knoll, including you talked to Bill Cowher, who replaced Chuck Knoll. I was fascinated by what Cowher told you about how Knoll didn't really have much advice at all for Bill Cowher when he took over.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too, John. And Bill told me, he said that was a great gift he gave me, because at the time they were going back and forth between Bubby Brister and Neil O'Donnell, which one they wanted. And Bill was trying to get Chuck to tell him, you know, Neil O'Donnell or Bubby Brister. And when he would ask him that, Chuck would go, "How's the family? You know, how you doing? You got a young family." He did not want to give him any predetermined thought. He wanted Bill to figure it out on his own, and Bill said that was the greatest gift he gave me.
Interesting. You also talked to my friend Tom Donahoe, who spent a lot of time working with Chuck Knoll, and I found this fascinating too. For a guy who was as single-minded and as focused on winning as Chuck Knoll was, Donahoe told you that on Mondays you couldn't tell if the Steelers had won the day before based on Chuck Knoll's temperament, his demeanor.
No, that's true, and there's a famous story, John, in that 89 season that I just talked about where they almost went to the title game. They started out with losses of 51-0 to Cleveland at home, and then 42-10 to Cincinnati at home. So it was, or 41-10. I think the total was 92-10 in their first two games against division opponents at home. And the next week, Chuck went, just people said, it was unbelievable. It was like they almost had won those games. He goes, "We play Minnesota this week, and Minnesota was good at the time. And this is what we got to do, and we're just going to go out and do it." They beat Minnesota. They wound up going to the playoffs that year, won at Houston in the playoffs, and almost beat Elway in Denver.
Hmm. Ed, in your memories of Chuck Knoll this week, you said that Chuck Knoll was among the most interesting people you've ever written about. Why?
Because for many reasons that I mentioned, that he was so different from a head coach. I mean, you get these head coaches, all they want to do is talk about football and this, that, and the other thing. And Chuck, all he wanted to do was talk about anything but football. You know, I walked with him many times off a practice field at St. Vincent College, not knowing what to talk about. We wound up talking about, you know, the Santa, what's those winds that come in from San Diego.
Yeah.
He knew all about what caused those winds and why there was a climate effect. And, you know, he once asked me, we were in Maui for the NFL meetings, and I ran into him and his wife, and they asked me to go snorkeling with them. And I had some other stuff to do, and I declined. And, boy, I have regretted that ever since. I wish I had gone snorkeling with Chuck Knoll and his wife that day.
Hey, Ed, I played a little game here with folks I work with here at the Bills, and I said, today, I said, who are the top three coaches in NFL history? And people mentioned Lombardi, George Halas, Landry, Bill Walsh. Some people said Belichick, Parcells. Why does it take, you know, educated football fans even, why does it take them so long to get to Chuck Knoll to put him in that company?
Because Chuck was so low-key. There's a famous story, Joe Gordon. He did one commercial. It wasn't even a commercial. It was a billboard ad. In his entire time, he never endorsed anything else in Pittsburgh. He tried to give all his assistant coaches or his players the whatever came his way. And he did this one ad because it was for a bank in Pittsburgh, and he was a friend of the president of the bank, and a guy asked him to do it, so he did it.
He never tooted his own horn. There's a famous story. Joe Gordon, the old PR guy, talks about. He said he always used to just, after a while, Chuck would turn down everything. So when people came to him with offers, and Joe would handle them all back then, he'd go, you know what, he won't take that. He won't take this. Well, Joe was on the radio the other day, and he said Hershey came to him and offered a $15,000 fee for Chuck if they just let him use his picture on an ad. He didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to pose for the picture. They would just grab one. And he said, Chuck said to him, he said, and $15,000 back then was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Chuck just said, you know what, see if they'll do one of my assistant coaches. I'm not interested.
Wow. Well,
and that was Chuck.
Yeah.
That was Chuck.
A compelling figure. Ed, we thank you very much for spending so much time with us tonight. We'll see you in a couple months down at La Trobe for those few days with the Bills and the Steelers.
Yeah, those practices might be interesting.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking
Doug
forward
Whaley
to it.
Doug Whaley going to make it down here. That's what I want to know.
Oh, he'll be there. Absolutely,
he
he'll be there.
He knows the lay of the land.
He does. Thank you very much, Ed. We appreciate it.
All right, John. Thanks.
Ed Bouchette, who covers the Pittsburgh Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, almost 3 decades now of handling the probably the most important beat you could get in a Pittsburgh newspaper, talking about Chuck Knoll, the Hall of Fame coach. He is a Hall of Famer, I'll give you that. He transformed that Steelers franchise when he took over. As Ed said, they'd only been in the playoffs once in history before that, and they made the playoffs this third year there, and then they went on to win 4 Super Bowls in 6 years, 9 players going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He went in the Hall of Fame in his first year of eligibility in 1993. So to say that Chuck Knoll is underrated, I think, would be overstating it. But, and I did play this game around the office here today, you know, name me the top 3 coaches in NFL history. No one, and I probably asked 10 people, no one mentioned Chuck Knoll. They mentioned Lombardi. They mentioned George Halas, Tom Landry, Bill Walsh, Belichick, Parcells. No one gets to Chuck Knoll, which is fascinating to me for a variety of reasons. Chope and the Bulldog, we talked with them in a few minutes before we went on the air tonight at 6:50, and Mike Chope made a good point about he had all those Hall of Famers. Yes, he did. But, of course, you know, with all those Hall of Famers, 9 of them from his 1970s Pittsburgh Steelers team went to the Hall of Fame. So it was a great collection of talent, but there had to be a coach that put that together as well and should get some credit for that as well. I just find it fascinating that Chuck Knoll, is he underrated? No, but he certainly is overlooked when you talk about, you know, the pantheon, the Mount Rushmore of NFL coaches. If you're building a Mount Rushmore of NFL head coaches over the years, is Chuck Knoll on that mountain? With Lombardi and George Halas? I would submit he should be, but I don't know if he'd make it. Anyway, our thanks to Ed Bouchette. A sad day. They have had several losses down there in Pittsburgh, and I think Bills fans can identify with that, with what's gone on around here over the last few months. But I didn't want to let the passing of Chuck Knoll go without notice, so we thank Ed Bouchette for coming on the show with us here tonight. Today, here at One Bills Drive, the focus was on the future and the upcoming season with the start of the first day of the 3-day mini camp. And the Buffalo Bills were here bright and early for 8 o'clock meetings, weightlifting sessions, meetings, and then finally on the field at 2 o'clock this afternoon. They pushed it up an hour to try to dodge the raindrops, which I don't think have hit here yet, although I think we're close here in Orchard Park. But here's some of the highlights, at least some of our observations from day one of the Buffalo Bills mini camp on the grass practice field outside the brand new, by the way, AdPro Fieldhouse, the AdPro Sports Training Center, we're calling it now, the Fieldhouse here. And we'll get to that in a moment, too. But minicamp, day one, absent from minicamp, Chantrell Henderson, 7th-round pick with transportation issues, Cordy Glenn, left tackle with an illness, and tight end Scott Chandler, who was excused for a family business. Offense, you know, the quarterbacks, wide receivers, tight ends went inside early on in the workout to run their routes against air. Nathaniel Hackett was there. Todd Downing was there orchestrating. Jim Hostler, the new senior offensive assistant on the sideline, watching things out. A couple of players in for tryouts. That's some of the news of the day as well, and we mentioned those names. 3 players in, 2 cornerbacks. Sam Miller from Florida International and Kamal McElwain from Newberry College, and a wide receiver, a giant wide receiver, Torrey Gurley from South Carolina. They were on the field for tryouts, not signed to contracts yet. 7-on-7 work when they went back outside on the grass practice field. First play EJ threw one deep left down the sideline to Sammy Watkins. The ball hung in the air and was broken up nicely. A great defensive play by defensive back Ron Brooks. Also in 7-on-7, Thad Lewis with a nice pass over the middle to tight end Lee Smith, who caught it between three defenders. Lee Smith ran with the ones today, the first-teamers, with Scott Chandler excused from training camp. EJ in 7-on-7 threw a nice pass to the outside to Lee Smith, who gets past the linebacker Ty Powell and picked up about 20 yards. And also during 7-on-7, Doug Marone was down with the offensive lineman. He splits up the offensive lineman with O-line coach Pat Morris. Marone working with guards for a while, then Morris works with the tackles, and then they flip. That went on during 7-on-7. Teamwork 11-on-11. It was interesting that Aaron Williams was back at safety. He was working back there with Denoris Searcy. Aaron Williams, who missed a lot of early OTA time as he recovers from offseason surgery, was back. And during the early team portion, too, Leotis McAlvin playing some cornerback. Stephon Gilmore playing some corner as well, so the starting safeties. Keith Rivers, free agent acquisition, got a lot of work at outside linebacker, both sides, and at inside linebacker during the nickel and dime package in the base defense. Keith Rivers working at one outside linebacker spot with Kiko Alonso on one side and, of course, Brandon Spikes in the middle. The defensive line for the Bills, anchored by Marcel Darius, back at practice today after missing the last few weeks of OTAs. Kyle Williams was in the middle. A lot of work for Jerry Hughes at one outside spot, and Jarius Wynn, one of the free agent signees, was at the other defensive end spot during 11-on-11 work for the Bills. Chris Hairston got a lot of work at right guard today with the ones. Eric Pierce, a lot of work at right tackle. Cyrus Quancho picked up the first team reps at left tackle with a illness to Cordy Glenn. So that's going to be interesting to watch. I would think that the Hairston to guard move looks like it might be happening. Keep an eye on that. We talked with Chris about it on the show here a couple of weeks ago. Another session of 7-on-7. The Bills now go with the backup cornerbacks, with Ron Brooks playing one cornerback spot and Corey Graham at the other. Sometimes I can't read my notes. I write them so quickly. Jeff Toole threw a good pass in 7-on-7 down the middle, complete to Chris Gregg, the tight end, who picked up about 20 yards. On the 11-on-11, first 11-on-11 session, it was again Quanjo at left tackle, Piers at right tackle, the starting safeties for the number one defense. Instead of Aaron Williams and Searcy, it was Duke Williams and Jonathan Meeks. Big play during the 11-on-11. Thad Lewis with a deep right sideline pass caught in stride by Marquise Goodwin. He got one step past Corey Graham. Turned into about a 70-yard touchdown play, probably the best and biggest play of the afternoon session. Two plays later, Thad Lewis threw a strike down the middle to Chris Hogan. Broken up nicely. A great play by defensive back free agent Juwan Harley. EJ threw a nice pass later on. Robert Woods sprang loose and picked up about 15 yards. In the final 11-on-11 session, EJ Manuel threw a deep right sideline pass intended for Sammy Watkins, which was intercepted by a free agent defensive back, Deion Broomfield. Hairston again at left tackle with the first team. Lee Smith, first team reps for Scott Chandler. And towards the end of the final 11-on-11 session, EJ threw a nice pass down the seam with a good catch made by for about a 20-yard pickup by Robert Woods. So some of the highlights of the Bills' work today in the first day of minicamp, the mandatory minicamp. E.J. Manuel talked after the session today and said that some of the plays that they put in there during this session today were new, as they tried to throw some new wrinkles at the Buffalo Bills' defense that they've been going against since OTAs. Here was what E.J. Manuel said about the state of the Buffalo offense at this point.
I think so. I think a lot of the plays we put in are new. So, you know, some new formations and things that, you know, to kind of throw some wrinkles out of defense instead of them just kind of looking at us as a vanilla offense, you know, running this way, running that way. You know, giving the defense different looks is going to help us. So there's still a few things that we're playing around with. But thus far, the new stuff that he's put in, I've liked it a lot.
EJ, execution changes the continuity, chemistry, whatever word you want to talk about, how that's developed over the course of the OTAs now heading into minicamp.
I think everything for us as quarterbacks is footwork. So if your feet aren't, you know, in line with what the receivers are doing in their steps on their routes, you'll be on time with your pass. So, you know, if you take one in a hitch and you can't take another hitch, if you throw to the same guy, you'll be late. And the defense will either get a knockdown or interception. So I think just learning that, you know, obviously that comes with some frustrations, but you have to learn it. You know, you'd rather do it out there on the practice field than on the game on Sunday.
The intensity level ratcheting up, do you feel it as you go through the OTAs and now the next step forward?
Yeah. You definitely could feel, you know, it turned up a lot more You know, having Big Marcel back, Kyle back, Mario, Lawson, all those guys, Manny Lawson is back. So, you know, as far as the defensive push, you feel a great push. And then adding Brandon Spikes as well. You know, they have a lot of good leaders over there on defense. So we're getting a great look on offense for us each and every day.
E.J. Manuel talking after today's practice, the mandatory mini camp. They'll be back on the field, scheduled to go tomorrow at 3:15. Who knows if they move it around again? I hope they make it earlier again. That works out better for us, but it's on the board for 3:15 to 5:15 p.m. tomorrow, day two of the 3-day mandatory mini camp. Do you realize that when the Bills come off the field on Thursday this week, the next time they're on the field is a training camp? Do you realize a training camp players report 4 weeks from this Friday? You realize that,
Jim? Don't ask me. Of course I know.
Yeah, we know. But it's just coming. It's coming fast. All right, we're going to talk about the fans' eye view of the Bills and Ralph Wilson Stadium, the stadium experience. We've done this before a couple of times, and the Bills have set up a fan advisory board made up of ticket holders, season ticket holders, just to kind of consult with them and figure out what their needs are, what they like about the game day experience. We're going to talk with Craig Hinderberg of the Fan Advisory Board just about what's going on recently with that board when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Coming to you live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here until 9 o'clock tonight, back again tomorrow night with another two-hour show, more on Bills minicamp tomorrow. I'm sure we'll have other highlights from practice to talk about, get a player guest in here and do a lot more. So make sure you come back tomorrow night. Hey, this has been going on since early in the winter. I want to say around February, the Buffalo Bills Fan Advisory Board had their first meeting. They have since met twice since then, including last Thursday night. The Bills Fan Advisory Board, a group of 14 Bills fans representing ticket buyers, season ticket holders from all sorts of demographics, all over geographically as far as Bills Nation is concerned. The Bills set this up. This is not the Fan Alliance. This is the Bills Fan Advisory Board. One of the members of that board is joining us live on the line right now from his home in Rochester, Craig Hinderberg. Hi, Craig. Thanks for being on with us tonight.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Hey, we've talked with Andy Major, the Bills executive who set up the Fan Advisory Board, a lot about this concept. It's an effort to reach out to the, you know, the customers, basically, for the Buffalo Bills standpoint, and find out what they what they're looking for in the game day experience. Tell me how you found yourself on the Buffalo Bills Fan Advisory Board, Craig.
Well, I've been a season ticket holder for 7 years now, and received an email looking for people who are interested. Filled out an application and went through a couple of interviews, and was selected to be one of the 14 members.
Why did you want to serve on that committee? What intrigued you about that?
Well, I thought it would be cool. I thought it would be interesting to kind of get a little peek behind the curtain in some of the decision-making process that was going on at the stadium. And, you know, I'm a season ticket holder, but I've been a group leader and sat all over in the stadium for different games before I was a season ticket holder. So I felt like I had a lot of experience to bring to the discussion and talking about what was going on at the stadium.
And you've had three meetings so far, right?
Correct.
And yep. Tell me, I want to talk to you about some of the particulars, but your overall experience through the first three meetings, has it met your expectations?
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, we're really honest. There's some diehard fans in that group, and we're really honest with the people from the Bills that are in the meeting, and they're really honest with us. So it's been very productive. They're taking our feedback and they're listening. And as we get reports back from them at later meetings, it sounds like they're implementing some of our ideas. So,
can you give us any examples of that, Craig? Ideas that have come up in the fan advisory board that the Bills are at least looking at, or maybe already have implemented?
Yeah, a couple meetings ago, we talked about the standing issue. You know, mm-hmm. Everyone's excited at the game, and there's obvious times in third down, and you know, maybe the first couple plays of a game where everyone seems to be up and standing, but there were some issues with people who just didn't feel like ever sitting down and just stood the whole time, and that makes it hard for some of the fans who can't sustain standing for 4 hours. So yeah. We talked about ways to solve that. One of the big issues there was the first two rows in the stadium are really blocked by the people on the field, so those people tended to stand just to be able to see. I don't know if it's completely official yet, but I believe they were talking about tarping the first two rows in the stadium to kind of alleviate the problem there.
That's a tough one, isn't it? You want the experience of people being into the game. You want the intensity of the home crowd. There's a special atmosphere about Ralph Wilson Stadium when the whole place is on its feet and, you know, cheering or chanting or whatever it is they do. You don't want to dampen that enthusiasm, do you?
No. No, you don't want to discourage people from getting into the game. I mean, that's the whole reason you go to the stadium for the game and sit in the weather and deal with, you know, traffic and everything else that goes with it, because it's that in-game, in-stadium experience that you're trying to be there for. So you want to be able to support the team and cheer and stand up and get excited. And, you know, but I do agree that there is a line at some points where, you know, you can sit down and take in what's going on.
Yeah, and the issue is always finding that line. And as it is on many of these issues, I would think, Craig, and as you said, you kind of get a view behind the curtain now over the course of these three meetings. The one thing that strikes me, and we've talked with Andy Major about this, is that, and this is going to sound self-serving, but the Bills, to my mind, are pretty proactive about trying to make it better out there. They got 73,000 customers here and a home game on a Sunday. It's not going to be the perfect experience for everyone, but they try, and they do listen, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Pat Matthews talks about how his team tries to address every comment or complaint that comes in after a game within the first day, if not 2 days, talk to those people directly. And they're really working hard to make sure that everyone coming to the stadium can enjoy the game, whether you're coming as a family, whether you're coming as a group of young guys having fun. But, you know, they're trying to make it fair for everybody, safe for everybody, and make sure everybody's having a good time.
Yeah, and it behooves them to do that. Those are the customers, right?
Right, and that encourages people to come and, bring their kids and teach them to love going to games and hopefully continue that their whole life.
We're live on the line with Craig Hendeberg of Rochester. He is one of the 14 members of the Buffalo Bills Fan Advisory Board. They met last Thursday. One of the things you talked about last Thursday, Craig, dealt with access and egress. I like saying the word egress, but it's getting in and out of the stadium in a timely fashion. That's a familiar complaint.
Yeah, last season, I think the home opener of the Patriots game was a little difficult getting everyone in. They've switched to wanding everybody, which I think was 2 seasons ago. But last season we had the new bag policy, of course, which kind of threw everyone for a loop. And a lot of people had trouble getting into that first home game before kickoff. But, we talked to Andy Major at the meeting, and he explained some of the causes of that and how they addressed it afterwards. And they definitely improved throughout the season. And I think as fans get more used to the bag policy and the procedure in the line, it's going to be better. We expressed a concern as a board. You know, we went from, I think, 9 gates down to these 6 gates
with right.
The new layout of the stadium. But they are bigger, so they're assuring us that it's going to be an easy entrance. Although you can't show up, 10 minutes before kickoff.
Right, as everybody would want to. But the new gates that are under construction now, part of the massive renovation project at the stadium, the new gates are designed to alleviate that issue. You guys got kind of a sneak peek at many of the construction issues from Joe Frandina, I believe, last week.
Yeah, he came in and talked about all the stuff they're doing and the progress that they're making on it. It's a lot of work. They have a lot of people working, two shifts, I think, to get all of the renovations done in time. But from where we were, I mean, I could see the gate structures going up and the new paint on the stadium. It looks really cool. So there's a lot going on.
Tell me about the other issues. What other issues have come up you spend a lot of time on now in these first three meetings?
Those are the big ones. We got a little bit of the state of the team. We talked about everyone being excited about the draft and what they did there. The board, I think, as most fans, was kind of split down the middle on happy to see Stevie go, not happy to see Stevie
okay,
go.
Yeah.
So we talked about players and what's going on with them and maybe some places we may need improvement there. We also talked about this new seat cushion availability for season ticket holders that have seat cushions permanently installed on their seats for the season. That's an option now for us. Talked a little bit about ejections and the imperfections of the game they experience and what they're trying to do to lower that number. Their goal is to be at zero. And like you said, when you have 73,000 people, a lot can happen. It's hard to control that. But I was interested to learn that the majority of ejections are just for people smoking, which, is not as bad as I think the perception some people have that don't go to the games, where they think you know, all these ejections are fights and drunks causing problems, where it's really just someone who, you know, can't follow the no-smoking rule.
Yeah. Greg, you mentioned you had a presentation from Jim Monos, the player personnel director here, about the on-field product. Is it your sense that these issues, you know, the game day experience issues, might be mitigated, if not totally wiped out, if the Bills were good? I mean, I hate to be cynical about it, but let's face it, winning cures a lot of these problems, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, they talked about that, and it definitely does, especially later in the season when, you know, if the team's not in it, most people are giving their tickets away, and you have people in the stands who aren't invested in the game or have a rooting interest for the team to win at that point. So, you know, if we can be in it later in the season and we're winning, I think you get a different fan at the game more consistently, and you spend more time paying attention to the game, and you don't, you know, get into the distractions that you might if it's a blowout or a wasted season.
Greg, you and your fan advisory board have had three meetings. Are there more meetings planned in the run-up to the start of the season this summer?
Yeah, I think we're going to have one more meeting before the start of the season. I think they're talking about having it at training camp. There's a few of us on the board from the Rochester area, so that'll be a nice reprieve for us,
sure,
not having to take the drive out. So we should definitely have one more before the season starts. And then we're going to continue them throughout the season, too, so we can give feedback as we, you know, as a group of fans experience all these new renovations and deal with them firsthand or see them firsthand, the food and the new gates and whatever else they throw in there. So
yeah, the whole stadium experience is about to change, I think, for the better coming up in a couple of months. Craig, thank you for being on with us tonight. When you come to Rochester, please look me up. I'll be out there virtually every day for practice, and I'd love to meet you face-to-face.
I'll do that.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for doing this tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Craig Hendeberg is a member of the Bills Fan Advisory Board. They've had three meetings so far, a group of 14 fans who, as Craig explained, how he was selected as a season ticket holder. And the object is to get input from Bills fans on improving the game day experience. You've heard Andy Major talk about it on our show. He's the Bills Vice President of Event Operations and Guest Experience. And we thought rather than get Andy's take, we'd talk to some of the members of the board, including Craig Hendeberg of Rochester. Our thanks to him for doing that for us tonight. Take a break. Come back with more of the John Murphy Show. We're presented by NOCO, and we're live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Craig Hendeberg of Rochester. Thanks to him for serving on that fan advisory board for the Bills, by the way. As you mentioned, he's made now three trips from Rochester to Orchard Park to attend those meetings. And thanks to him for coming on the air with us tonight. A couple of callers want to talk about the in-stadium experience. Pete in Lancaster. Hi, Pete. Welcome. You're on the air. What's up?
Hey, Murph. How you doing?
Okay.
Been a season ticket holder for a long time, 20 years. And my biggest beef is when I'm in line trying to get into the stadium, there's always a huge mob of people outside the gates, 500 people. And inevitably, some nincompoops start doing F-bomb chants right there and then. Mm. And I'm with my kids, and the security guards look the other way all the time, every game. So I would ask for better security at the gates before the game.
Yeah, and what do you do with people who do that chant? Do you tell them to stop? Do you arrest
them? I personally, you know, try to cover up the kids' ears, and I ask the security guards to come over and say, can you knock off the obscenities, please?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's reasonable. That's reasonable, Pete.
I mean, it's ruining my game day experience with the kids.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Okay, thanks. There's another call about the game day experience. Craig in Rochester. Craig, hello. You're on the air.
I really liked that segment. It was, you know, really cool to hear that. But I agree with that guy. Went to the Ravens game, and, you know, one of the things I don't like with our fans, and it's a select group of idiots, but, you know, this guy's in the bathroom, he's a Ravens fan with his beer, and he turns to, you know, walk out, and some guy just knocks over the beer for no reason, and I kind of agree with that guy. You know, with swearing, it's kind of harder, because how do you do that? But with some of the actions our fans do, they do get out of hand where, you know, I'm all for, you know, poking fun at them and letting them know that we're kicking their butt, but there's no reason to, you know, go that type of way. You know, and that would be the thing. I like a lot of the things they're doing. I hope they make some more measures to try to make it a little bit more family-friendly, because I don't know if I had a son if I would want to bring him until they're about 10 or 13 just because of the environment.
All right. Thanks, Craig. Yeah, legitimate complaint. We've talked a lot about these issues with Andy Major during the course of the regular season last year. We had Andy on, I think, every couple of weeks or so, talk about the fan experience. He's the Bills' vice president of guest experience. And we can do that, too, in the offseason. Maybe we'll get Andy in here. He wanted us, and I'm glad we did, talk to people like Craig Henderberg tonight, who are members of the fan advisory board and who are on the front lines of trying to address some of these problems. So I'm glad we had a chance to do that tonight. Tomorrow we have another session of mini camp, and we'll talk about that when we rejoin you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We'll have a player guest in here in the studio and some other stuff as well. So make sure you tune in for that tomorrow night, 7 to 9. The Bills back on the field tomorrow at 3:15 p.m. That's what the scheduled time is now. We'll see how that plays out tomorrow. They moved it up an hour or so today. Maybe they got to move indoors tomorrow. I don't know what the weather situation is, but we'll see how it plays out tomorrow. All right, so that's going to do it for us tonight. Want to thank all of our guests, including Kiko Alonso, who joined us in the first hour in studio to talk about his return to the field. Ed Bouchette of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette joined us. Great to hear from Ed about his memories of the great Chuck Knoll, the Hall of Fame coach who passed away. And again, to Craig Henderberg of the Bills Fan Advisory Board. Thanks to him. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight is T.J. Luckman, our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills Director of Broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. See you tomorrow night at 7 with the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.